Chazal defined tefillah for us as avodah shel halev. What does that phrase mean? So there are different understandings in the Rishonim. Commenting on the Mishnah in Perkei Avos, you have it in the second course in front of you, that Shimon HaTzadik Hoya Mishori Anshei Knesset HaGdola, he was one of the last of that group known as the men of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, Hu Hayo Omer, he would habitually say, Ashtosh Advam Ha'olam Omer, the Torah is sustained in the merit of our involvement in three areas, Al HaTorah, Al Avodah, Al Gemara Masorah. So Ben Yonah comments on Avodah as follows in source number 3. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bacha B'Yisrael Mekol Umas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from all the nations of the world, He chose Klal Yisrael. From the entire cosmos, He chose Eretz Yisrael. Within Eretz Yisrael, He chose Yerushalayim. And within Yerushalayim, He chose Har Habayis, as the pasuk says, Kivacha Hashem B'Tzion, Iva L'Moshe Lo. Kadosh Baruch Hu chose Tzion, Kaviyochel, he desired it as a resting place, as a home for Himself, Kaviyochel. Uvacha Mikol B'Beis HaBechira. And above all, the choicest place in the entire Bria is the Beis HaMikdash. And why is that? Bishvil HaAvodah. Because that's where the Avodah, that's where Korbonos were offered. So Hinei Lecha, Ki Mipnei HaAvodah, Nivra Kol HaOlam Kula. The entire Bria finds its fulfillment in our engaging in Avodah, Avodah's Korbonos. Oz b'chata'enu, Rabbi Yonah continues, Chorev Mikdash u'bot la'avodah, as a result of our sins, the Mikdash was destroyed, and until it's rebuilt, b'mheri v'yameinu, the Avodah has been discontinued. So how does the world function now? How does the world continue? V'hatfila eleinu achshav b'mkoma. The substitute, the religious equivalent of Avodas HaMikdash is when we daven. HaTfila Eleinu Achshav B'Mkoma, Kamo Sha'amru Chazal, Ula'ovdo B'chol Levavchem, Eizehu Avodah Shevalev, Hame'om Ezo Tfila. So according to Rabbi Yonah, it's clear that within the phrase Avodah Shevalev, the word Avodah should be associated specifically with the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. And what it means is that the equivalent of the Avodah of Beis HaMikdash happens, instead of through Korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, Balev. So that's what Avodah Shel Balev represents for Rabbeinu Yonah. But the Rambam doesn't really tell us what his understanding of Avodah Shel Balev is, but it's pretty clear that it's not Rabbeinu Yonah's. If you backtrack to source number 1, so the Rambam also quotes this Maimer Chazal, Mitzvah's Essay Lehistal B'chol Yom. It's a mitzvah to daven daily, Shanema Va'avatem Es Hashem Elokeichem, Mipi Hashmua, from the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral tradition, Lomdu She'avodah Zo, that the Avodah, the service, the worship, the form of worship that the Torah refers to here is Tefillah. If you continue to, and you read through the balance of Halacha Aleph, Halacha Beis, Halacha Gemel, there's no allusion, no reference to Korbanos, to Beis HaMikdash, to any kind of equivalence between Tefillah and what happens in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Rambam in no way indicates that's his understanding of Avodah Shel Balev. What we're going to discuss now is not being fully documented, but there are other sources that we don't necessarily have the time for, which do substantiate. But the Rambam's understanding seems to be as follows. Let's perhaps move to the next word in the phrase, Balev. So we generally translate Lev as heart. And that is a correct translation, but it's only one of the meanings of lave. Another meaning of lave is that lave often represents the mind. For instance, when the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah tells us what the lav of lo sasur acharei lebavchem in the third parasha of Kriya Shema, so we recite the pasuk lo sasur acharei lebavchem. You shouldn't wander. You shouldn't be led astray by levavchem. So the Rambam says that that prohibits us from being undisciplined in our thinking and gratuitously entertaining and conjuring up all kinds of thoughts which contradict the foundations of emunah. That a person shouldn't go achar machshevos libo, after the thoughts of his lave. So it's clear, and the Rambam says this explicitly, that one of the meanings of lave, alongside the meaning of heart, is that lave also means the mind, thought. Avodah shebelev for the Rambam is, avodah doesn't have, for the Rambam in this context, isn't supposed to have that more narrow connotation as it does for Rabbeinu Yonah. Don't associate it specifically and narrowly with the Beis HaMikdash. Avodah means service, worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which mitzvah is it that represents serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu not through actions, but through thought? Avodah Shebelev means that the core of the mitzvah of Tefillah is to be thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the core of the mitzvah of Tefillah. It's avoda, it's a form of serving a Kaddish Baruch Hu. How balev, but which plays out not through physical action and movement, but it's avoda, it's a form of service of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, which plays out balev, which plays out in the mind through thought. Or in other words, the core, the essence of mitzvah Tefillah is to be thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, it's true, Chazal then, the Torah already, and Chazal amplify it for us, they sort of guide our thinking, and to focus our thinking, we have to articulate it, but the core, the essence of Tefillah is Avoda, it's a form of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Balev. It's possible. I know it from looking in the mirror. Hopefully, you only know it from other sources. It's possible for a person to be very busy, very preoccupied. At times, maybe even preoccupied with Torah and mitzvahs, but not to be mindful of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to not even having a passing, fleeting thought of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And al achas kama v'kama, when one's obligations involve mundane preoccupations, one is certainly susceptible to that. The mitzvah of tefillah, according to the Rambam, the Torah, by requiring that we daven, so the Torah says that we have to block our time to think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the heart and the essence and the core of tefillah is. Again, so in terms of thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay, so we engage in a dialogue where we say words of praise, words of bakosha, words of hodah, but the core, the essence is, it ensures that a person blocks out time to be thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, one's routine, again, even if it's a routine which is halavai and halavai that it is, which is full of Torah and mitzvahs, but a routine, it can become routinized, it can become mechanized. When a person davens properly, it ensures, it anchors one, that one has devoted some time to thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam tells us, he continues to tell us, let's perhaps move on to another point, try to gain another perspective on tefillah. The Rambam tells us that the the Deoraisa of Tefillah doesn't specify a specific text. That was introduced by Chazal in the times of Ezra, also the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. But the format, the Torah does give us the format, the structure for tefillah, and that's the format that we know from our Shemoneh Esrei as well. You begin with Shevach, you begin with words of praise for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you follow that with Bakasha, with request, with petitioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and finally we conclude with Hodah, with expressing our thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now within that structure of Shevach, Bakasha, and Hodah, so the center piece of that is the Bakasha. And I don't mean that just literally, because it's first Shevach, then Bakasha, and finally Hodah, but it's the Bakasha which is central to Tefillah. One can see that in many sources. Maybe I'll just read you a comment of Rashi. I'm sorry, it's actually not in the source sheet in front of you. Rashi is explaining, he's quoting a Yerushalmi, which explains what the idea of Smichas Geula LeTefillah is. The idea that both in Shachris and in Arvis, so we first say Birkas Kriya Shema, specifically culminating in the Bracha of Gaal Yisrael, and then we segue directly, without any interruption, into the Amida, into Shemoneh Esrei. So the Yerushalmi explains and says that Yiya Odam Mekarev LaHakadosh Baruch Hu Elav Umeratzehu B'Tishpachos V'Kilusin Shal Yitzias Mitzrayim. A person, as it were, Kaviyachol, should draw HaKadosh Baruch Hu close to him and should try to find favor with HaKadosh Baruch Hu by saying words of praise, and specifically about Yitzias Mitzrayim, V'hu Miskarev Elav, and that achieves the desired effect. That again, Kaviyachol, it narrows that distance, it brings us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then, given that closeness, given that proximity, so now we're positioned to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what we need. So it's clear that the essence of the tefillah is the bakasha, and the shavach is the preliminary. A person can't just barge in, kaviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what I want. A person has to begin with words of shavach. But the essence of the core of tefillah, that the central element is the bakasha. The question is, why is that so religiously significant? Again, tefillah, as I'll tell us, is one of the things which is one of the dvarim haomdim berumo shel olam. Tefillah is something very, very exalted. Within tefillah, the central element is bakasha. Why is that something so exalted? It just looks like we're looking for self-gratification. You can't take HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here's my shopping list, and please, I want free delivery also. Not only do I want shopping, I also want free delivery. It would seem, if anything, that the Shevach and Hodah without Bakasha should be more meaningful. If one praises HaKadosh Baruch Hu and then there isn't a follow-up Bakasha, okay, it seems to be a more altruistic praise. If one thanks HaKadosh Baruch Hu not on the heels of asking for more, that would seem to be more altruistic. So why is it that the bakasha, the asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu is central, is so central, and why is that something so exalted? So Moshe Mavdov Adomah. I'm not sure, it used to be around here, I think it may have closed down a few years ago, maybe behind the times. It used to be this famous toy store, FAO Schwartz. It's still here? Closed, yeah. So it was sort of legendary toy store. So imagine, Moshe Mavdov Adomah, imagine a child goes with his or her parents to the toy store, and they're going up and down the aisles, And predictably, so the child keeps tugging on the mother's sleeve, on the father's sleeve. Can you buy me this? Can you buy me that? Let's get this. Let's get that. So the question is, why doesn't the child just take things into his or her own hands? Let the child buy the toys. Why does the child have to try to persuade and win over the parents? So the obvious answer is that if the child had one of those magic pasta cards, so then he or she would, but the child doesn't. The parents have the card. So when you ask, there's an acknowledgement that one isn't self-sufficient. The significance of asking, which is why when we need to ask from each other, if a person, Rahman Litzlan, ever has to ask for tzedakah, it's so humiliating, because it's an expression of not being self-sufficient. So, Nam Tatsuchen Lodide Matnas Basar Vadan, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we should never be needy vis-a-vis each other, that vis-a-vis each other would be self-sufficient. But when we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we ask, the reason that's so important and that's so exalted is because there's an acknowledgement there. If I could ensure my own understanding, intelligence, I wouldn't have to ask you for it. Were it not for the fact that Atachonim Odom Dasim Lame Lanishvina, I wouldn't be petitioning you for the Chaneinu Me'itcha Tachna Vina Vadas. If I spiritually didn't need Siyata Dishmaya, I wouldn't be asking you for help in doing tshuva. I wouldn't be asking you for Slichu Mechila. I wouldn't be asking you to preserve and or restore my health. I wouldn't be asking you for Parnosa. If I could take any of these things into my own hands, I would. So Bakasha is so important. Bakasha is something so exalted because of what the Bakasha reflects. The Bakasha is an implicit acknowledgement of a person's total neediness, helplessness ultimately, and vulnerability. And that's what's so significant about Bakasha. When you think about it, I think most of us, sometimes we're zochet to see people who have conquered this challenge. But most of us struggle to have kavanah when we daven. I think that's probably a fair statement. Maybe it's just that I'm projecting. Maybe there's some truth beyond that as well. And sometimes we wonder whether we really even have the capacity to have sustained kavana for davening. And objectively, there is a challenge. There's no physical focal point when we daven. It's always easier to concentrate, to have some physical focal point. Okay, so Nefesh HaChayim says that there's a school of a kavana in tefillah, that even if a person is davening, if a person is comfortable davening by heart, that a person should visualize the words in his or her mind's eye. But Lamaisa, again, that too, a person has to take the initiative to do that. There's no physical focal point. Kavan is a challenge. So, I don't know, so are we even capable of it? So sometimes we wonder whether we are. But try to think too, and I think everyone's had such occasions in his or her life. Think of an occasion, whether Rahman Litzlan, that there was a close family member or a close friend who was very ill, and one was saying tilim on that person's behalf, or Rahman Litzlan after a pigua in Eretz Yisrael. And what happens then? There's no physical focal point for tefillah then either, but somehow or other, we do muster the kavana. We do have kavana, and it's not just because the tilim is only for 30 seconds. No, sometimes we say tilim for a more extended period, and we are able to sustain the kavana for that extended period as well. So what is it that we're tapping into then that, I don't know, on a daily basis, we don't we don't access. So the answer is that then we feel there's an awareness of our neediness. And when we feel and when we have that acute awareness and feeling of the neediness, so then we're able to meet the challenge of having kavana and sustaining kavana. And what happens, apparently, on a daily basis when our mind wanders anywhere and everywhere but to the sitter during davening, it's because apparently we don't feel any vital need. We don't feel any neediness. We don't feel any vulnerability. The reality is that we're always totally vulnerable. A person can't assure his or her next breath. A person can't assure anything. We're always totally, absolutely dependent upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're always totally, completely vulnerable. We're always, again, we're told to take initiative. We're told to do our best. We're told to make hishtadlus. But at the end of the day, that's all it is. It can't assure, it can't guarantee results. We're never in a position to unilaterally generate results. If we would be aware, if we would have that self-awareness every time we davened, so then we would be able to have kavana. But the lack of kavana is when we're not attuned to what lies at the core of tefillah, which is this recognition, this acknowledgement of our neediness and our total dependence upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why it's also our behavior at times is very ironic. Life is often very busy, and often it seems like there's 26 hours worth of things that need to be crammed into 24 hours. And sometimes we feel rushed when we daven. And it translates and expresses itself as it does. But when one reflects on that for a moment, it's just so ironic. What am I rushing for? Why am I rushing for Shachris? Maybe I have to get to the office for an early meeting. Maybe I have to get to the Beis Medrash. Maybe I have to meet someone. Maybe I'm trying to beat traffic. I'm trying to do something. I'm trying to accomplish something. That's why I'm rushing. Why am I coming late to Mincha? I was busy with something else, some other responsibility or non-responsibility, whatever it is. I'm trying to do something, trying to accomplish something, trying to use my time. Ultimately, everything needs Siyata D'Shmaya. That we cut corners on tefillah to make time for other things in life, for what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to accomplish in the office, etc. So for any of those types of reasons, it's when one thinks about it, it's really self-contradictory. I'm not coming to, that there is halachic discussion, whether a woman's obligation is to daven only once a day, whether it's to daven twice a day, whether it's to daven three times a day, and I'm not qualified to pasken in any area, and that's not what I'm presuming to do here either. But without commenting on what the halacha is, it's very important that everyone davens three times a day, men and women alike. It's just so, whatever we're trying to do in life, whatever we're trying to accomplish in life, the self-awareness and self-image that a person is supposed to have going through life, all of that is compressed into tefillah. The Gemara in Brachos, it's the last source that you have here, it's on the second side of the page, says that there are many, many great halachas, Hilchos Gavrosa, many, many great, important halachas of tefillah that can be derived from the description of Chana davening. So presumably it's not coincidental that the Navi, when the Navi wants to offer us a paradigm, an illustration of tefillah, that it chooses a woman. The message between the lines is that Noshim have a that they're endowed with a special korach tefillah that they can draw from. The Rambam goes on to tell us, he traces that, maybe before we move to that, to reiterate one point here. But when the Rambam, in Halacha Beis, in source number one, when the Rambam describes again the format of tefillah, so he says towards the end of the first line of Halacha Beis that Magid Shvacho Shalom Kadosh Baruch Hu, a person recounts the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Achakach Shor Tzrochav, Shu Tzorach Lahen, then the person again petitions HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and finally Achakach Nosin Shevach Vehodoya Lashem. So that phrase, Achakach Shor Tzrochav, Shu Tzorach Lahen, so isn't that just the tautology? I mean, Tzrochav, a person's needs, are those things that he needs. Right, so what does the Rambam mean with that double phrase? He should have just said "Achakach Shor Tzrochav," or "Devarim Shu Tzarech Lahen." But a person asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to respond to his needs that he needs. So the answer is that what the Rambam is saying is "Achakach Shor Tzrochav." It shouldn't just be that I know intellectually that I need this. It should be also shehutzarach lahen, that a person feels the need. It's not only, again, that objectively these are my tzrachim, objectively these are my needs, but it should be shehutzarach lahen, by adding the verb as well, not just the noun of tzrachim, but the verb shehutzarach lahen, that the person feels the need. Again, because that's the essence of tefillah, recognizing, experiencing the neediness, dependence upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why Bakosha is the central element of tefillah. The Rambam then goes on to tell us what we know, of course, that today we have a set text of tefillah. The Rambam describes that the 13 middle brachas of the Devei Shemoneh Esrei have bakoshos, which are super categories, the kol tzarkei ish ve'ish, for all the individual needs we have, as well as the tzarkei harabim. So one of the questions which naturally arises is, how can Chazal, especially the point we just said, that Bakosha is supposed to be that a person petitions HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what the individual feels a need for? So how can Chazal give us a set text for tefillah? How doesn't that seem to interfere, if not prevent? Again, the tefillah is supposed to be tzorach of shehu tzorach lahen. It's supposed to be something that a need that I feel. So how Chazal are telling me how I feel? So here's our motion. Here's a motion. So imagine, imagine an elementary school, high school, and the students are told that Bill Gates is coming to visit the school, and he's bringing his checkbook, and you can ask whatever you want. And so the first, let's make an elementary school. So the first boy goes in and says that he wants a new bike. Okay. So Bill Gates takes out a check, for $100, whatever the bike costs, gives it to the next boy comes in, says he wants a new baseball glove. So Bill Gates says, okay, good. Whatever the, you look up in Google, you find out whatever the going rate is for a baseball mitt. The principal hears what's going on, so he asks Bill Gates, can we take a little break? He calls all the children in for an assembly and says, listen here, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. He'll give you whatever you're asking for. If all you ask for is a bike, so that's all you'll get. You can ask for that he should give you money to go to college. You can ask that he should give you for money to go to college and then to when you get married to buy a house. You can ask that he should give you money for that, and then he should give you money to be able to fund your children's college tuition. Don't be petty. Don't squander the opportunity that you have. Ask for the right things. So tefillah, the set text of tefillah should be descriptive. It should match what we need. But if it isn't, so then it's prescriptive. Then it serves as a prescription. And what and we can learn from tefillah, if when I open the siddur and I daven Shmon Esrei, the bakoshes that Chazal formulated don't articulate what I need, so then I need to look into the siddur to learn about what's important in life. So again, halavai, the text of the Shmon Esrei is descriptive, but at the very least, it's prescriptive. So maybe let's look and just notice two things about the brachos of Bakosha that we have in the Shmon Esrei. Number one, we begin with the spiritual, and only later do we ask for the physical. We only ask for health, we only ask for parnasa, after we first ask for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give us the knowledge, give us the understanding. If there was ever a time when that was important, it's today's day and age. We live in such a confused and therefore confusing world, where people are so mixed up about values, and they're so mixed up about morality, and they're so mixed up about right and wrong, and a person can be fabrent about something that's totally wrong and totally immoral. Rivon Shalom, the first thing is, Chazal say, "Ein day havdalah minayin." If a person doesn't have understanding, if a person doesn't have discernment, if a person doesn't have insight, so a person can't draw distinctions. A person can't distinguish between kodesh and chol, between good and bad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the first thing is, give us chokhma bina v'das. Again, what's next? Again, not to belittle, not to downplay the importance of health, the importance of having a livelihood, but that's not what we ask for. That's not front and center. What's next? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help us come back to you. Help us come back to you. Help us reconnect with Torah. Help us become more involved with Avodas Hashem. Help us do tshuva. Ribono shel Olam, forgive us for all our sins. Most important of the spiritual bakoshes. Again, not to dismiss, not to belittle the physical and mundane, but still, we need to have perspective. And again, if for whatever reason the Shemoneh Esrei isn't descriptive for us, then it should be prescriptive for us. And it tells us, you know, a person looks into the Siddur, and then, you know, we can then look into our lives and see whether or not there's a congruence or lack thereof. Is my life focused primarily axiologically on the spiritual, the way the Siddur, the way the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah teach us? Or is that sort of a sidebar? Is that something which is more peripheral in my life, and my life centers more around the Baruch Aleinu, around the Parnosa? The other striking thing when you look into the Siddur and think about it, probably something we should spend more time doing than we do, is how many of the bakoshes are focused on the klal, and specifically the geula ha'asida. Right? By the time we get to Tkar v'Shofar, which is what, the seventh of the middle bakoshes, right? So the first six, say, are meaningful individually as well. I mean, look, we're always supposed to daven b'lashon rabbim. We're always supposed to be davening, not only for ourselves, but for others as well. But the point is, it's meaningful on an individual basis as well, each of the first six bakoshos. But after that, the Tzkar v'Shofar Gadol l'Cheruseinu, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu again for Kibbutz Goliath, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to restore the Sanhedrin, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Binyan Yerushalayim, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Mashiach, for the reestablishment of Malchus Beis David, A, we're focused on the klal, and B, specifically, looking towards and asking for the Geula Asida. So clearly, again, what Chazal were helping us do is articulate what's supposed to be in our minds. What's supposed to be in our minds. And there too, it then the Siddur then generates two questions for us. Number one, how klal-oriented am I? Sort of again, in terms of my thoughts, my focus, my energies, in the Shemoneh Esrei, so half of it is dedicated to the klal. Does that tally with how my thoughts and energies are focused in life? And secondly, am I really longing for the geula? As I'll say, what one of the questions that a person is asked, lo'asid lovo, is tzipisa li'yeshua. Did one long, right? To suppose means to long for something, to be waiting expectantly for something. Tzipisa li'yeshua. What was one? Mitzapa li'yeshua. And that's, again, what the last group, the last cluster of brachos in the Shemoneh Esrei is about. Again, it generates the question, it prompts the introspection and self-reflection. How much is that present in my life, the Tzipi of the Yeshua? Maybe to comment briefly on that, it deserves its own time. But just to comment briefly on Tzipi El Yeshua. The only way one can have a sense of longing is if there's a sense of missing something, if there's a vacuum. If two siblings, if a parent and child, if a husband and wife are separated, for an extended period of time, so they miss each other. There's a sense of longing. So there's a tzipiyah. If nothing's missing in my life, basically life is good. Basically life is good. I'm not missing anything, so I'm not going to be longing. I'm not going to be longing for anything. Tzipiyah Yeshua is only possible when we have a sense of void within our lives. And again, that relates again to the spiritual focus, to the role of Avodas Hashem within our lives, to the concern for Kvod Shamayim, to the profound anguish at Chilul Shem Shamayim. So all of those need to be cultivated. When a person is spiritually oriented, so then a person can recognize the objective void that exists. But as long as we're more focused on the mundane, the material, so things have never been better. In terms of life's comforts, so life gets better and better as time goes on. According to most opinions, when the Mishnah in the source 4 and the source sheet in front of you, says that women are obligated in tefillah, it means that they're obligated to daven two or three times a day, according to most opinions. There is a novelty reflected there, because one would have ordinarily expected the rule of mitzvah esei shehazman groma to be applied, in which case women should have been exempted, and that isn't the case. Again, according to most authorities, what the Mishnah means is that Zman Grama notwithstanding, so this is an exception to the rule, one of the exceptions to the rule, and women are obligated. The Gemara says, why is that? Because Tefillah is Rachme. Gemara right underneath there in source 4. Tefillah is Rachme. A person is petitioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a person is imploring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what does it mean? So Rav Soloveitchik has a very, very beautiful explanation. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and elsewhere tells us that mitzvahs lav lehanas mitno. That one is not supposed to look to, and one is not supposed to classify al pidin mitzvahs as a source of enjoyment. Rather, Rashi fills in the counterpoint, la'ol al tzavarehem nitna. When a person fulfills a mitzvah, so a person is supposed to acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the mitzvah, and I'm the commander. Obviously, that doesn't mean that mitzvahs don't. Mitzvahs certainly do bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They bring us to personal fulfillment. But what we're supposed to, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbon. What we're supposed to emphasize is we recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Briyosecha Anachnu, we are your handiwork, we're your creation, you're the Mitzavah, we're the Mitzuvim. You're the one who commands, we're the ones who are commanded. We're supposed to feel a sense of tzivui, of commandment in the mitzvah. That's part of experiencing Kabbalah's on mitzvahs, part of fulfilling Kabbalah's on mitzvahs. There is, however, one exception to this rule. There's one mitzvah where the obligation does exist, but that's not what a person is supposed to focus on. If anything, it's ke'ilu, a person is supposed to be oblivious to the obligation. And that, says the Rav, is tefillah. How do we know that? Because the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in the second parak of Pirkei Avos, says, Sha'ata mispalel, Altas, how does it go? Altas tfilascha keva ela tachanun emuth behamakom. Something like that. I don't think I got it quite right, but something to that effect. But when you daven, your davening shouldn't be something which is kavua. It shouldn't be something which is fixed, but it should be rather, again, just a spontaneous plea imploring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Rav, what that means is that davening, a person is not supposed to feel like I'm davening because I have to daven. There is an obligation to daven, an obligation that we can't neglect. But that's not supposed to inform or define one's mindset and one's experience of tefillah. Because again, think about it. Imagine, Rahman Litzlan, someone is ill. And they're trying to get a consultation with the biggest specialist. And finally they get it. So they feel a sense of obligation? No, they feel a sense of opportunity. They feel a sense of blessing. They feel a sense of relief. Here's the person who may have the keys to chart my path to good health, to chart the path to recovery. So a person doesn't go begrudgingly feeling, well, I'm doing this because I'm commanded to do it. It's a blessing. It's an opportunity. It's extraordinary. So that's what the experience of tefillah is supposed to be. Unlike all of the mitzvahs, where the mitzvah is an occasion, a person, it's religiously correct that a person should feel an all. A person should feel that, yes, I bear the all, I bear the yoke of mitzvahs. I recognize that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's prerogative to be mitzvah, and that it's my obligation to comply, to listen, to be a mitzvah. But when it comes to tefillah, that's not supposed to be, again, the obligation notwithstanding, that's not supposed to be the mindset. Says the Rav, that's what's reflected in the din, that the rule of mitzvahs esei shahazman groma doesn't apply here. Mitzvahs esei shahazman groma, again, so I'm focused on the obligation. The obligation is time-bound, so the rule is that if it's a mitzvahs esei shahazman groma, so an isha's p'turah, that's all when you're focused on the obligation. Here, obligation notwithstanding, it's almost antithetical to tefillah to be thinking of tefillah as a yoke. Tefillah, on the contrary, it's think of that moshel. Tefillah is an opportunity. It's a blessing. Perhaps just to conclude with one thought. Formal tefillah takes the form of Shemoneh Esrei. Again, something that we engage in three times a day. If one wants to say additional Shemoneh Esrei, what the halacha calls Tefillas Nedava. So there too, there's a formal requirement of Chidush Dava. One can't simply say a fourth Shemoneh Esrei. There has to be some added bakosha, which sort of serves as that justification for an additional Shemoneh Esrei. But the formal requirements and details of tefillah are not intended to limit or to exhaust our communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person's about to do something. Walking into a class, I'm about to take an exam. A person should say, no one else has to hear. Whatever one can do without anyone else noticing is always 100 times better. If it can be done without anyone noticing, it should be done under the radar. person can whisper a silent tefillah, Kadosh Baruch Hu, help me. Kadosh Baruch Hu, please help me. That tefillah as an expression of our neediness, tefillah as an expression of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, doesn't have to and shouldn't be limited to the three times a day of Shachris, Mincha, and Arvis. It should be something which is always there. I'm about to do something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me. Help me. It doesn't have to be necessarily the most important thing. Remember the Rav once commenting that what does a person ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu for? Whatever it is that a person wants or needs. Lemaisa, maybe what I'm doing now isn't the most important thing, but I'm doing it for a reason. Okay, so maybe in the larger scheme of things, this isn't the most important thing. Obviously, it has some, albeit low-level importance. There's some importance. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. Shalom, help me. Shalom, be with me. Help me. Help me succeed. That's what one of the lessons of tefillah, again, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be a presence in one's life, that a person should be thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that a person should recognize his, her constant need for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that can be expressed not only in the formal three times daily occasion for tefillah, but informally all the time.